Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today for Character Month, April 2020. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I hope you're having an incredible time crafting your life vision. Our guest for today's episode is truly an extraordinary one. You may have heard of Dr. Sri Kumar Rao. He's an educator, he's an executive, he's a best-selling author, a speaker, an elite coach. He also created the amazing course, Creativity and Personal Mastery, and it's one of the most popular and highest-rated courses at business schools around the world. Dr. Rao, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Jordan. Whatever I can do now to help the Mind Valley community in these turbulent times, I'm glad to do.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you, my friend. For those who are just now tuning in, who maybe haven't heard of you before, can you catch us up on all the work you've been doing with speaking, teaching, your work with Mind Valley, all the deep character work that you do?
Certainly. I created a course called Creativity and Personal Mastery that was among the most popular and highest rated courses at many of the world's top business schools. And what was unusual about it is I state right in the syllabus, this course will profoundly change your life. And if it doesn't, we both failed. And the reason I was able to make that statement is because basically I've drawn material from the world's greatest masters, stripped them of religious, cultural, and other connotations, and adapted them into exercises, which modern persons in a post-industrial economy can relate to.
Oh, I love that.
So considering where I draw my material from, the surprise isn't that it'll change your life. The surprise would be if it did not change your life.
That's incredible. I love that. Kind of distilling everything down to its core concepts, its core exercises. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yes, absolutely.
That's incredible.
It's not my stuff that changes lives. I'm merely a translator. I like to think I'm a good translator, but I'm a translator.
I like that. I absolutely love that. I know a lot of this work revolves around character. You know, when you're doing the deepest work, that's really what it all comes down to when it comes to who you are as a person. I know you deal with character traits like resilience and grit. How crucial is a strong character full of these wonderful qualities if we're trying to live a truly extraordinary life?
Extremely important, Jordan. I can't stress how important it is. But here's the real nub. You don't become a good character or you don't develop a good character by trying to develop a good character. What happens as you go through the exercises that I posit, that I share, is that the mental models you have, which cause you to view the world in a particular manner, change. So you literally become a different person. And this different person has a character that most people would call exemplary. It happens organically as a byproduct. You don't set out to have or develop a good character. It happens organically.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's very, very powerful. So many of the greatest thinkers of our time, right, have come down to exactly what you just said. The things you do, your habits, that's really what makes your character. There's so much espousing of ideals. There's so much espousing declarations, right? Do we need to put more focus on what we do and less on what we say?
Yes, Jordan, but once again, there is a caveat. What we do springs out of what we think, and it springs out of who we are. I go deep down and get persons to examine their mental chatter and to examine the mental models that they hold. The mental models that people hold determine how they view the world. And that determines who they are as persons and their actions, what they do, flow from that. When you start making changes in your mental models, your view of the world changes, you become a different person, and therefore what you do, your actions change, and they change organically. Most people try to bring about change in themselves by an effort of will. Darn it, I'm going to exercise regularly. I'm going to stop smoking. When you try to bring about change in yourself by an effort of will, odds are pretty good you won't succeed. But even if you do, you're doing violence to yourself, and there probably will be a byproduct that you're not very happy about. For example, you stop smoking cold turkey, you eat too much, you put on weight. In the process that I have just outlined to you, change happens and it lasts. And it lasts because it's not by an effort of will. It's by examining the models you have, making changes in them, as a result of which you become a different person, and the behavior of this different person is different because it's a different person.
Makes perfect sense. How would you relate, you call these mental models, are these similar to what people might call beliefs, limiting beliefs, things like that? Or is it more than that?
It's a bit more than that. Many limiting beliefs are also mental models, and mental models automatically have that in there. Okay. But it also goes much deeper than that. And I'm trying to see how I can explain that clearly to persons listening to the podcast. Let's simply say that beliefs encompass assumptions, and many of these assumptions you're not even aware of.
Ah.
I'll give you an example. I always talk about, you know, you do not have control, you never had control, you never will have control. And people nod that and say, yes, yes, I understand. And even when people think they understand it on a relatively superficial level.
Kind of intellectually, example, not deep within themselves.
For example, they might say, yes, yes, I understand, I don't have control. And they mean, I don't know whether I'll get this job that I desperately want or not. Or I don't know if my marriage will survive. I don't know if my kid will get into Harvard, and so on. But within this, I don't know if this will happen, is an underpinning where you still believe, if I want to have toilet paper, I'll go to the grocery store and pick it up. If I'm hungry, I'll go to a restaurant and eat, or I'll pick up a sandwich. The notion that you might not be able to do that doesn't even occur to you.
Right.
Whereas as we're seeing around us right now, that too could happen. And that too is part of you have nothing under control.
Yes.
So it's that deeper level, the assumptions that are built in that we challenge in my program and in my coaching.
Oh, that's
so
that's
we go much
incredible.
Deeper than simple. Does that come through what the difference is?
It does. And that's exactly right. And I kind of want to dig further into that. Is there a great strength and a great tranquility in coming to grips with what is outside of your control is outside of your control?
Absolutely. What I state to my coaching clients, what I state to persons who take my program is, what I want you to experience is the feeling of being radiantly alive every day. If not all the time, at least a big chunk of the time, where your blood is singing at the thought of being who you are and doing what you do, of that deep sense of really deep well-being, where you know that you're doing exactly what you were put on earth to do, that deep conviction. That deep conviction, by the way, leaves you with a sense of well-being that is really indescribable. That is what I want everybody to experience, because that is, in fact, our natural state as human beings, and we've very fallen very far from this natural state.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the things that we value in modern society don't exactly line up with what you just said, Dr. Rao. I mean, things like a lot of money. I mean, does that even, we equate money to happiness. We equate intelligence to happiness. I'm not sure there's a direct line between either of those things.
There is no connection whatsoever. Those things are neither good nor bad. And if somebody comes up to me and they have an overwhelming desire to make a lot of money, that is just fine. In fact, I encourage them to do that. But they should do that with the knowledge that when they make a lot of money, all they will have is a lot of money. A lot of money will not translate into the state that I spoke about, which is independent of whether you have any money or not.
I would absolutely agree with that. It's interesting to hear such educated people. Like, you're studying this subject. I'm sure you're deep in research. I love to hear your opinions kind of reflecting my own, because I'm just talking to people. But it's really cool to hear a doctor come on and espouse these kind of ideas. So it's very exciting to me. Let's talk about character traits which you think serve us best. I mean, there are very few categories where people agree so much that discipline is good. You know, compassion is good, but maybe you can talk to us about some of the character traits we might not think of and which will serve us best in building an extraordinary life.
The first thing, Jordan, is a recognition that everything that happens to us is an opportunity for us to work on ourselves. And the only thing we ever do in life is we work on ourselves. For example, you're a husband, you're a parent, you're a son. You try to be the best husband you can be. You try to be the best parent that you can be. You try to be the best son that you can be. But in the process of doing that, in the process of being the best parent that you can be, what you are really doing is working on yourself. Your children are tools given to you by the universe to enable you to work on yourself.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Your wife is a tool given by the universe to you so you can work on yourself. Mm-hmm. You use these tools as skillfully as you can. And in the process of using them skillfully, you're working on yourself. And that's the only thing you ever do in life.
That's great. That's fantastic. And it kind of obliterates the line between selfishness and selflessness, right? Mm-hmm. If we are working on ourselves through serving others, then there is no selfish or selfless act.
Exactly correct.
Yeah.
When you have that in mind, what I advocate is you have to find a cause which is bigger than yourself. And that is not a problem because you're only working on yourself. So the bigger the cause you pick up, the more work you can do on yourself. And to which you can subsume, if not your whole life, at least a big chunk of it. And as you do that, you will find that a fire literally settles into your heart, and
I love that.
It leads you to tremendous well-being.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Normally, we talk about happy, and we talk about equate happiness with pleasure. You know, I had a wonderful meal, so I feel happy. You know, I saw this great movie, and I'm happy. Those are transitory flashes of pleasure. Leading. And they're wonderful. I'm not knocking them. But that's not what I mean by happiness.
Sure.
By happiness, what I mean is you're really rooted in this very deep feeling of well-being that never leaves you. Look, we're all in the human condition. And as long as we're in the human condition, stuff will happen. There will be serious illness and death. There will be relationship problems. There will be financial setbacks. There will be career reverses. It's all part of being in the human condition. As and when these things happen, you will deal with them as appropriate, but you will deal with them from the emotional domain of I am okay, I have always been okay, I will always be okay. That is not change. In fact, I have something that I want to share with your listeners, which is it's very easy to have a terrific day every day.
Oh, please share.
Okay. All you have to do to have a terrific day every day is get up in the morning and decide you're going to have a terrific day.
Oh, I love that.
Now, most of us make the following mistake. We equate having a terrific day with two things that have nothing to do with having a terrific day. And those two things are, number one, stuff should happen that I want to have happen. And number two, stuff should not happen that I don't want to have happen.
Very egotistical approach, now that you put it like that.
Neither of those is under control, and neither of those has to have anything to do with having a terrific day.
Right.
So if you're smart, what I would encourage you to do is get up in the morning and decide you're going to have a terrific day, and also recognize that feces is going to fall from the sky. So in your terrific day, you're going to devote a couple of hours to cleaning up the that falls, if that happens. So here you are, and in your terrific day, you're going to spend a couple of hours cleaning up that has happened while you're having a terrific day.
Man, I love that approach. That puts the control back in your hands.
Yeah. You get full control by giving up full control, because all of the problems in our life are caused because we are constantly resisting what is.
Mm.
And happiness is completely embracing what is. Now, you can embrace what is and still say, I want to change things.
Right.
I'm embracing the fact that there is coronavirus. It's shutting down my city and a large part of the country. It may get a lot worse. There could be a crime. You know, I fully embrace all of that. I am still going to try to change it, but I'm going to try and change it from the emotional domain of this is what is. It is beyond my control or anyone's control. So I'm working to change it, but I'm doing so from the space of great calm and love and affection.
That's great.
That is something, that is a domain you can occupy, but you have to think about it and consciously make it, this is the home I want to live in. Most people don't think about it. They don't think about the world in the way in which I have just laid out to you.
That's exactly right. I think what you said about resisting what is absolutely right. And then that resistance to let go, right?
Yes.
It's what you said about intellectually accepting things on the surface, but not deep within your heart, within your soul. I was recently listening to a guy named Ramsey Dewey. And he's this incredible martial artist, and he's living in China, and he's talking about his experiences with coronavirus there. And what he was saying was so incredible. He was talking about martial artists and something that they have, this warrior code where he says everyone knows they're going to die, but they know it up here. They don't know it deep in their heart.
Yes.
And when you reach that level of understanding within your soul, there's a weight that has been lifted. And he was talking about helping sick people, and people are saying, aren't you scared? He's like, I'm not scared to die. And it was just, it made me have chills because I'm not like that. But I thought it was so powerful. You know what I mean?
Can I share something with you
Please.
On that? I have a very powerful exercise that I'd like to share.
Please.
This one actually comes from Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. The conspirators stabbed Julius Caesar because they felt that they could rule Rome collectively after this dictator was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I told you, you have nothing under control, nothing ever under control. And they didn't figure on two things that happened. First, Mark Antony got up and gave his famous friends, Romans, countrymen. But Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man speech. And that riled up the population against the conspirators. And second, Octavian Caesar gathered up a legion to came after them, and they were defeated at the Battle of Philippi.
Right.
Before that happened, Brutus was regretting his role in the assassination of Caesar, because when Caesar said et tu, Brute, it really struck home. So he regretted his role in it, but that's water under the dam. So when Cassius makes a request of him, he declines. And as Cassius was leaving, Brutus says, and whether we shall meet again, I know not. Therefore, our everlasting farewell take. Forever and forever, farewell, Cassius. If we should meet again, why we shall smile. If not, why then this parting was well made. Now think about it. People listening to this podcast, they go off to work, they go on journeys. And anytime they do, they leave behind. They leave behind partners, spouses, children. Is there any guarantee that they will ever see them again?
Right.
What happens if you have this vividly in your mind as you say goodbye to your wife, as you say goodbye to your children, as you head off to work? What happens? What about all the petty irritations, the annoyances, the garbage that we have in our heads that pollutes? What happens to all of that?
Out the
it
window.
Drops.
Yeah.
Completely drops. This is a very intense exercise, and people will probably find it difficult to be in this space all the time. But everybody can cultivate that space some of the time.
Yes.
So you're leaving on a journey, you look at your partner, and you have in the back of my mind, and whether we shall meet again, I know not.
That's beautiful.
That changes you, it changes your partner, and both of you can feel it, and it alters the relationship. If you do that even some of the time, you will find that you're leading a richer life. Your relationships are enhanced, and your life is enhanced.
The beautiful fragility of life, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Well, since we're on this subject of reshaping what we're traditionally afraid of, I think we should talk about fear. And there's so much of it now, you know? Very few people are talking about the messages you're talking about, Dr. Rao. Most people seem to be stoking the flames of fear. Maybe that's just my view, but...
No.
What in your opinion is going on, and what is the antidote for this fear?
There is a lot of fear going on, and all of the fear is actually, if you think of it, very, very me-centered. We all tend to live in a me-centered universe. And when we're being afraid, what we're really saying is, I have this vision of this is the way the world should be. And darn it, the world is not cooperating. I have a vision that restaurants should be open. And anytime I want to go, I can choose. Do I want to eat Chinese or Korean or Thai or a burger place? And I should be able to do that. Right now, that's not true. The world is not conforming to the way in which I want it to be. And I resist that. And in the process of that, I say, hey, it's not cooperating with me. And I am, all fear is me-centered.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really embrace the concept I shared earlier, which is you do not have control, you never had control, you never will have control. So stop trying to rearrange the world to fit who you are. And I'm going to contradict myself now, and I'll tell you exactly what the resolution to that contradiction is. So accept that, okay? But at the same time, I say, hey, the world isn't the way it is, go out and change it. But here is the nub. By all means, go out and change the world, or try to change the world and make it the way you would like to be. But do it because that is your preference. Do it knowing that you may succeed or you may not succeed. But in any event, it does not matter, because you are in that emotional domain of being deeply centered, completely filled with radiant aliveness. That is the space from which you set out to change the world. You don't set out to change the world from a place of fear. Oh my God, if the world isn't like this, then I am screwed.
That is so fascinating, because I feel that most people who are in the business of change hold the latter mind state.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, and the ones we really admire hold the former mind state.
If you're in the shape, well, I have to change the world because if not, you know, all kinds of horrible things are going to happen and I can't bear it, then you are acting from fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear will really gut you psychologically, emotionally, and in many other ways. It will also severely and adversely affect your health.
That's right. So it's about letting go. You know, one of my favorite guests, friend of Lifebook, Dr. Joel Wade, just talks about focusing on what you can control and letting go of the rest. And I think that there's a piece of that in what you're saying.
Oh, there's a big, big chunk of that. Except that I would add that there's very little that you can control.
Yeah.
Even your thoughts are beyond your control.
Sometimes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, good point. That is a good point. Well, one thing that we use a lot in Lifebook, kind of as a go-to tool, and I want to get your take on it. Gratitude, right? It's so unlike anything else. You can summon it pretty cool. You talk about controlling your thoughts. Gratitude is one of those things that you can kind of summon. And talk about your work in gratitude and appreciation and how that all plays into this.
Oh, appreciation and gratitude is a huge chunk of what I cover in my programs.
Mm-hmm.
We begin with a baby step. You know, that's summed up in the saying, I was sorry because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet.
Right.
People say, hey, you know, I'm really privileged. You know, I don't have to worry about whether I'll have dinner tomorrow, whether I have a bed to sleep in, whether I have a roof over my head and things like that. And that's wonderful as a starter. As someone who took my program said, Professor Rao, whenever you use this technique, it seems as though you're looking down on somebody else who has less than you and putting yourself above that person and feeling grateful because you're above that person. That's not a very nice thing to do, and I refuse to do it.
Hmm.
And of course, she was right. But this is a baby step. It's like training wheels. You know, you have training wheels on a bicycle until a child learns to ride. And once the child learns to ride, you take the training wheels off.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, I do take participants in my course and my coaching clients to the point that whatever you're grateful for can vanish from your life. You're grateful for good health, you get hit by a truck and become a quadriplegic. So the aim is to be grateful, period. You're not grateful for something.
Whoa.
You're grateful.
I love
that. And you have to work your way towards that, because when you do, you are grateful and all kinds of things are happening to you. Your company is shuttering its door. Your customers are leaving in droves, but you are still grateful.
Wow.
And you address all of these situations from your domain of being grateful, because that's your default emotional domain. That's what I try to lead people towards.
Oh, we've done so much work on gratitude, and I've never heard anyone say, be grateful, not for anything, just be grateful. That's powerful stuff, Dr. Rao. Listen, we're coming to the end of it here. I want to get all the information on where my listeners can find more of you. Do you have any final words to wrap up to help life bookers take their character to the next level this year?
Yeah. Remember that each day when you are not radiantly alive, each day when your blood isn't singing at the thought of being who you are and doing what you do, is a day wasted. And you can be in that space even as you deal with the many things that happen in your life. Some of these things you like, quote unquote, some of these things you dislike. By all means, change the things that you dislike or attempt to change the things that you dislike, but do it from the space of I'm okay, I'm always okay, I always will be okay.
That's wonderful.
Is it okay to share my website with your listeners, Jordan?
Everything. Anywhere my listeners can find more of you and your work.
Thank you. Well, I would encourage them to browse my website, which is www.therauinstitute.com. Also forming a mastermind group and a coaching clientele of persons who want to leave an enormous impact on the world, but at the same time also foster their spiritual growth. And if anybody is interested, they can write to me for more information. And my email is srikumar, S-R-I-K-U-M-A-R .rao@therauinstitute.com.
Incredible. Dr. Rao, prepare to receive a lot of applicants.
It would be wonderful if they did. What I want, I do not want a lot of applicants. I want a few applicants who are really dedicated to that. I'm looking for quality more than quantity, Jordan.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. Dr. Rao, thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. I've done a lot of these. This was a very, very special one and interesting one. So I appreciate you sharing your wisdom, my friend.
Thank you very much, Jordan, and I wish you and all of the people listening to this broadcast an absolutely terrific rest of your life.
Incredible. Everyone listening, thank you so much. This is Dr. Srikumar Rao and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast. Bye-bye.